Thank you for listening to Greening of the Great Lakes, online at mlive.com/environment. Here's more with your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
A Michigan State University professor of philosophy has published a new study in the journal Bioethics, which contends that U.S. public has become largely indifferent to climate change, and he suggests possible ways to reverse that trend. With me is Dr. Sean Bias, who also holds an appointment in MSU's residential Lyman Briggs College. Sean, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
For our listeners who may not be familiar with the term bioethics or bioethicist, give us a snapshot, if you can, a short version of what it is that you and your colleagues do.
Yeah, so I guess I'm nothing if not a pluralist. So I would consider somebody to be a bioethicist if they're everyone from the people serving on hospital ethics committees deciding on high-risk surgeries. So that would include clergy and nurses and doctors and who have an interest in ethically running our medical system, all the way through people who do more academic work like I do, publishing in journals and writing books, that sort of thing.
So issues ranging from death and dying to public health across a wide spectrum, I would imagine.
Death and dying and vaccination programs and opting out and opting in and all these sorts of different things. Organ donation. It's a complicated medical world out there. And so this is practitioners and academics who are concerned with making sure we do it all in an ethical way.
So bringing together essentially the study of ethics, which has been historically a philosophical domain, and human biology.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, your recent article, let's get to that because I had the pleasure of reading it. It's very compelling. But you start with the premise that people and the general public has become increasingly, I think your word is, apathetic about the whole climate change debate. And you have some suggestions on why they have become so.
Yeah, so my concern about this issue actually came about from teaching a little bit of climate change material inside my courses. I teach a majority of my students are heading into medical careers of some kind or another. And I would talk to them about climate change, and they didn't see that there was actually any connection between their medical interests and climate change. Mm. And so I would show them these massive amounts of data showing that there would be problems like increased asthma complications in young children because of climate change, or buildup of ground-level ozone irritating lungs. It's increased mortality of elderly people from heat waves.
Heat strokes and things of that nature, yeah.
And so hospitalizations, things like that. And so when they heard about this, they were shocked. But I was so interested to see that they were part of this generation that had been raised thinking of climate change as being sort of, they were surrounded by these Be Green messages. They've spent their entire lives surrounded by climate change messages, but almost none of them seem to convey to them that this is a matter of health, and something, and health is something that matters especially to them since they're pre-medical students. Hmm. But health matters to all of us, and so why are we not getting these messages that seem to matter? And so that's where I was coming from with this. Why are we not talking about health when we talk about climate change?
Yeah, in your article, you talk about three ways that the climate change debate has been framed. You just mentioned one, the environmental context. The national security context, which we've covered on this program, I'll ask you this too, but which seems to be of interest to particularly former military people and folks who've been, and then there's this the health context. The focus has always been, I think that's right, primarily on the environmental context.
Primarily that environmental context, and so you were mentioning the little press release that MSU put out, and one of the ways I put it is that we have this, when we think about climate change, we sort of have this image, if you do a Google image search for climate change, you get about a dozen versions of that polar bear about to fall off that ice
right,
floe.
Right, absolutely.
And that is literally what we picture.
Or this green sphere floating out in space somewhere.
Yeah, something like that. If that's what we imagine and what we talk about when we talk about climate change, I feel like then there's been a failure among people trying to communicate climate change to actually give people who are skeptical, who are worried, who think about jobs, have we been giving people enough of a reason to actually care about climate change? Mm-hmm. So if there is the possibility that we would have some sort of loss of certain types of jobs as a result of combating climate change, is that something we'd be willing to do? Is that a price we'd be willing to pay? And if the benefit is saving that polar bear, I don't think we've made a compelling case.
But there are compelling reasons. As much as your child getting asthma.
It really doesn't, and it's not. This isn't an effort to try to be manipulative. This is just putting on the table one of the major concerns that we need to be talking about. And so, one of the things we need to talk about is the health aspects. And so, my article was written in the journal Bioethics, which is written for bioethicists. Surprise, surprise. And I'm trying to make the case that that we should see ourselves as partners, or as I like to put it, as people who should be sitting at the table. So all sorts of people should be sitting at the table talking about climate change. It should be farmers. It should be people in the military talking about national security. It should be all these different groups of people, people doing agricultural work, people doing policy. And bioethicists, I think, should be some of those people, since when it involves ethical issues and harms and it involves health, then bioethics.
My guest is Sean Bias. He is a professor in the Department of Philosophy and also the Lyman Briggs College at Michigan State University. Sean, in your article, you go at some length to point to an example of where the health framing has been successful in convincing people, and that's antibiotic resistance.
Yeah. So this example seems to be compelling to some people and not as interesting to others, but. My background with my previous research involved a lot of work on evolutionary biology, and so looking at evolutionary biology, you run into all sorts of the sort of constant issue that a large proportion of the American population is very skeptical in some manner or another about evolutionary biology. They're not so sure how this whole evolutionary biology thing works and how is it consistent.
The numbers are amazing, actually.
Yeah, and setting aside the
and you have the numbers in your article, too.
Yeah, setting aside the evidence for all of that sort of thing, what I found so interesting as someone with that background is that we have a case where even though there's this population that's really not convinced about evolutionary biology, they are willing to do something about it. And so superbugs, these antibiotic resistant bacteria and fungi, we are willing to do something about them, even though we have this sort of background concern about evolutionary biology. And that gives me some hope, thinking about how you don't have to be firmly on board. You don't have to say, I trust those climate change modelers running their simulations in some random computer science department. What I really need to know is there enough evidence that there's going to be a serious medical harm? Do we have reason to worry based upon the evidence that we have? And I think we can provide that. So based on the evidence, we know that these antibiotic-resistant bugs are dangerous. And even though we're not sure exactly what's going to happen next, we have enough reason for action just based on that limited evidence.
And your point about media, too, et cetera, the following of some of these bugs like MRSA, what have you, and they tend to present the risks without getting into the philosophical debate on evolutionary biology,
exactly.
Which is huge, right?
Exactly. So when you see a magazine run an article on human evolution, then sometimes they'll have some sort of statement from anti-evolution groups giving their little take on it.
Right.
But I've personally never seen that when it comes to the superbugs. Mm-hmm. There's no, the superbugs, they're not, we don't need to worry about evolution, or you're misunderstanding something like that.
They don't commingle those, are you?
Yeah, that's sort of concern about it. Well, now it's time to dispute the foundations of evolutionary biology. That doesn't happen when we talk about superbugs. It's just taken as a medical thing, and let's treat this as a serious medical concern and respond to it rationally, deliberatively as a society. And so that gives me hope.
Well, we got about a minute and a half left here, and I know it's going to be tough to boil this down, but next steps now, I mean, in terms of framing climate change so that those healthcare concerns do resonate, I mean, it's a lot about messaging and different disciplines looking at this whole issue, but what are the next steps in getting this done?
I'm an educator, and so one of the things I do is when I'm helping to train the next generation of doctors in Michigan, and one of the things I try to do is to just put this on the table. Like I've been saying, there we need to have this on the table as one of the things we talk about. I bring it up at cocktail parties. I'm sure people are really annoyed at this after a while, but while I keep having people saying, "Oh, I hadn't heard about that," that means the task is just beginning. So my more modest position is that when we talk about climate change, let's try to talk about, among other things, human health impacts. So we need to worry about those heat waves. They're going to be killing the elderly and are killing the elderly. And that's something that we should take seriously as people who want to live just lives.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with bioethicist and MSU faculty member Sean Vias. He holds appointments in both the Department of Philosophy and in the excellent residential Lyman Briggs College.
Yes.
Sean, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
MLive Media Group is a Greening of the Great Lakes partner. To read Kirk's blog and to hear our show archives, please visit mlive.com/environment. This is Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze. We'll have more in a moment.